This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
There are stories that we cover here that certainly feel big. And then there are stories that feel like pressure points or pressure cookers. The kind the entire country presses its thumb against just to see if anyone flinches. The Epstein files fall squarely into the second category, not because we don't already know parts of the story, not because Epstein hasn't been a fixture in the public consciousness for well over a decade, but because for the first time the public isn't getting the sanitized press release version or the carefully curated court exhibit or the redacted summary of unimaginable crimes. They're getting the archive, the machinery, the scaffolding that held this entire ecosystem upright for years. And when you show people the scaffolding, the whole structure, it looks different. That's what's coming. Not the story of one man, the story of a world that let him exist. Because when these files drop, the first thing people will feel is overwhelm. That isn't a neat, linear narrative. It's a sprawling universe of documents, evidence logs, emails, bank transfers, travel records, phone correspondences, internal debates between federal agencies, handwritten notes from investigators who were trying to connect dots in real time, and material seized from properties that Epstein thought would protect him. And woven into all of it are the lives of victims who deserved justice long before Congress ever decided the public had a right to see the truth. It ain't just a list. It's far, far, far more than a list. Before we continue to get into this, I'm going to ask you, if you've not done so already, please hit subscribe on our channel on YouTube, Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. If you're not already there, please go check it out. You're like, well, I'm watching this. How could I not be there? People listen to this as well. We're a podcast, too. So if you're listening to us on whatever it may be, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, do check out our YouTube channel. Like I said, Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Hit subscribe. We're trying to get to 100,000 by the end of the year. We're almost there. We're getting close. We might be able to make it with your help. If you've not already hit subscribe, please do. We put out commentaries and coverage of this in many cases all throughout the day, every single day of the week. So please do hit subscribe and let us know your thoughts in the comments section. The scale of this and this release is why the release matters. Not because there will be a single document that makes the world stop spinning. There'll probably be several of them. Although it's possible. Because once everything is out in the open, even with redactions, the story becomes too big for institutional silence. Too big for convenient memory. Too big for the kind of political maneuvering that has always shaped who gets held accountable in this country. And who gets quietly forgotten. And that's what terrifies the people who benefited from Epstein's orbit. The knowledge that once the public can see the raw texture of these files, the old explanations, they kind of stop working. So let's walk through the reality of what's inside and what this moment is actually going to look like. For starters, these aren't just Epstein documents. They are documents from multiple investigations spanning multiple decades and multiple agencies that never collaborated as much as the public assumes. You'll see evidence from the 2005 Palm Beach inquiry that local law enforcement tried to pressure more aggressively than anyone expected. You'll see traces of the 2008 Sweetheart deal that still remains one of the most baffling prosecutorial decisions in modern history. You'll see federal communications from 2019 that were written under the right of embarrassment, the right of knowing Epstein's victims had been right all along. And you'll see the quieter years, the ones that exist in emails and calendars and receipts where Epstein was already a registered S offender, but still somehow moving around the world like a man who never actually faced consequences. Those quiet years are the center of gravity in this release, because for every moment Epstein's name appeared in a headline, there were years where he operated in sanitized silence. Years where he was hosting dinners with Nobel Prize winners and hedge fund giants. Years where universities accepted his donations, where scientists took his meetings, where politicians visited his homes, where his planes carried the kinds of passengers who now swear they had no idea who they were sitting next to. You can't understand Epstein without understanding that part. The part where his post-conviction life looked like a man who had simply taken a public relations hit and moved on. The files will show you how that version of Epstein worked, not through sensational photos or explosive revelations, although those might appear, but through the mundane details, the casual email, the dinner invitation, the calendar entry, the handwritten note referring and referencing a meeting that by itself looks innocent, but in the context of everything else, raises questions about why anyone was still doing business with this man at all. You'll see patterns that no journalist, no survivor, no investigator had access to in full before now. Patterns of relationships that only make sense when you see the scale of his network laid out in its entirety. And let's talk about that network, not the tabloid version, the real one. People who interacted with Epstein fall into several distinct groups, and these files will make that painfully clear. You'll see opportunists, the ones who liked being adjacent to wealth, to connection, to possibility. They weren't necessarily breaking the law. They were just drawn to the glow of someone who made them feel important. Money is seductive. Access is seductive. Epstein knew that better than anyone. Then there were the legitimizers, high-profile academics, scientists, philanthropists, and business leaders who believed they could be the ones to rehabilitate Epstein's image after the 2008 conviction. These individuals will appear frequently in correspondence, often discussing funding, research, partnerships, sometimes in ways that will make the public question why they were so willing to overlook his past. But again, it won't necessarily prove criminal involvement. What it will prove is complicity, not legal complicity, social complicity, which in some ways is even more revealing. Then there were the beneficiaries, people who received favors from Epstein. Money from Epstein, introductions from Epstein, people who accepted gifts, grants, or connections that carried strings they refused to acknowledge. Some of them knew exactly what Epstein was. Others convinced themselves they didn't. These files will reveal how often he used his resources to bind people to him, to create a network that made him useful even when he should have been radioactive. And finally, there were the protectors, the individuals and institutions who, through negligence or intention, helped maintain the bubble Epstein operated in. That includes law enforcement officials who downplayed allegations, prosecutors who crafted unusual, lenient agreements, and institutions that continued to open doors for him long after they should have been closed. These moments will be visible not because anyone wrote, "Let's protect Epstein" in an email. They won't. It'll be visible because when you see the full timeline, the choices stop looking like coincidence and they start looking like a very suspicious pattern. And that's what makes these so explosive. Not the shock factor, not the names that make headlines, but the pattern that emerges when you put everything together. Because suddenly the story stops being about whether Epstein acted alone. He didn't. It becomes a story about how systems fail when they're incentivized to. How predators thrive in the shadows created by money, influence, and institutional fear. How someone like Epstein became possible in the first place. So what about the material itself? What will we actually see? Well, will likely get thousands of pages of internal memos, summaries of victim interviews, investigative reports, search warrant returns, inventory logs describing the digital media seized from Epstein's properties, financial ledgers, travel records, visitor logs, flight manifests, and a massive collection of correspondence between Epstein and dozens of individuals across politics, academia, finance, science, technology, entertainment, and philanthropy. Some of those names will mean everything. Some will mean nothing at all. Some will be familiar. Some will be obscure. The challenge for the public and the media will be understanding the context. A name in a spreadsheet is not guilt. A name in an email chain is not guilt. A name in a flight log doesn't necessarily mean someone did anything wrong. But a pattern of names across years, across continents, across meetings that make no sense for someone with Epstein's criminal history, that's where the context matters. And those files will provide context and contextualize people who are in that orbit who we've been waiting a long time to see come to light. But here's the part no one is prepared for. The files won't just show what Epstein did. They'll show what he didn't have to do. Because the most damaging parts of this story are the places where the system simply laid down for him. The places where prosecutors backed off. The places where investigators and investigations stalled. The places where leads died on the vine. The places where victims weren't believed. The places where agencies disagreed internally, but no one pushed hard enough to force more transparency. Those moments will appear between the lines, in the pauses, in the redactions, in the gaps that shouldn't exist. And yes, there will be redactions, heavy ones. Victim identities will be protected. Material involving minors will not be released. Evidence classified for national security reasons, and yes, that category does exist here, will not be disclosed. We can go into the argument of the honesty of that, of, well, it's how coincidental. You're suddenly reopening an investigation you had closed right when Congress says, show us your work. How convenient that those things can't come out right now. Odd. Very odd. And there'll be pages that look like blackout curtains that will frustrate people. And it should. But every redaction does tell a story. When you see what's missing, you understand the limits of what the government is willing to expose and what it still feels compelled to protect. You're also going to see the human side of this, not just Epstein's victims, but the investigators who tried to pursue him in the early years and faced resistance from their own ranks. Notes from people who clearly saw the danger, warnings that went unheeded, moments where it's obvious someone was trying to do the right thing and ran headfirst into a system that wasn't ready to confront a man with Epstein's reach. Those moments will be some of the most powerful parts of this release because they show a truth people rarely get to see. Institutions aren't monoliths. They're collections of individuals, some determined, some apathetic, some compromised. And the outcome of a case like this depends on who wins those internal battles. The public will have to reconcile something uncomfortable, something that some people failed Epstein's victims not because they were evil, but because they were under or overwhelmed, under-resourced, or discouraged by superiors who saw more risk than reward in pushing the case further. Others failed because they were seduced by proximity to wealth or convinced that Epstein's connections made them untouchable. And still others, a much smaller group, may have failed because protecting Epstein protected themselves. The files might not spell that out explicitly, but the implications will hang heavy. And once they're out, the public reaction will split. Some people will be outraged that more wasn't released. Some will cling to the redactions as proof of more sinister truth. Some will weaponize the names of innocent individuals who merely cross paths with Epstein. Some will demand new investigations into people who appear repeatedly in the records. Some will insist this is all ancient history. Some will say it doesn't go far enough, and some will say it went too far. That's the nature of a case like this. It touches too many nerves to produce a single unified reaction. But there will be one collective realization. For the first time, the public is seeing the infrastructure of a predator who survived because the system around him was designed to bend when enough pressure was applied. That's the part that changes things. Because once you show people how something actually works behind the scenes, they can't unsee it. And they can't go back to believing the comforting version. So what happens after the release? Probably not what people want. You're not going to see mass arrests of high-profile figures simply because their names appear in these files. You're not going to see decades-old allegations suddenly become prosecutable. You're not going to see a perfect roadmap to who knew what and when. What you will see is renewed pressure on institutions that have spent years avoiding transparency. You'll see lawmakers calling for hearings. You'll see victims demanding explanations for the investigative failures that allowed Epstein to operate so freely. And you'll see systems that protected the wealthy and powerful. You'll see renewed skepticism about how justice is applied and to whom. And maybe, if the public stays engaged just long enough, you'll see policy change. Better protections for victims, stronger oversight of prosecutorial discretion, more accountability when sex offenders try to leverage power or wealth to rebuild their networks. But that will require something rare, sustained public attention. Epstein's story has always been one with a long shadow. The question is whether the files make that shadow so large the country can no longer look away. Because these documents aren't about the past, they're about the present. They show how easy it is for someone with money and influence to weave themselves into the fabric of institutions that are supposed to protect the vulnerable. They show how fragile justice is when it collides with power. They show how predators exploit systems, not just people. And they show how many opportunities existed to stop Epstein long before he became a global headline. This release won't give the world closure. It won't tie up loose ends. It won't answer every question, but it will finally, undeniably, show the truth of what Epstein was and what the world around him allowed him to be. And that, more than anything, is why this moment matters. Give me your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube. If you're not already there, if you're listening to us on a podcast platform, please do hit subscribe there, but give us your thoughts on our YouTube channel. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi on YouTube and you will find us. While you're there, please hit subscribe. We're trying to get to 100,000 subscribers by the end of the year. We are getting close, but we do need your help. So if you like the content, you enjoy taking this stuff in every single day, thank you for that. But do please hit subscribe. You don't miss any of our content then, and you help us grow. So thank you for that. Lots of thoughts on this. I want to hear yours. So let's hear it in those comments on YouTube. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Until next time, I am Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.